And welcome to Double Cross Radio. We are live in the Jefferson Republic, also known as Southern Oregon and Northern California. I'm your host, Drew Lamb, and I'm joined tonight by my co-host, Chuck Horton.
And, hey, Drew.
Hey, Chuck. And Chuck has lined up a very special guest for us tonight. Our friend Tony Bones is returning to the show, and Tony is a contributor to Cop Block, and she is a peace activist and anti-police brutality activist. She also has her own program called The Bones of Anarchy, and she'll be calling in just a few minutes here. What we're going to get into tonight is what's going on in Ferguson, and we're going to talk about the protesters and some of the varying ways that people are expressing themselves over there, and as well as what the Oath Keepers are doing over there to protect private property. And we're basically seeing some discord among the activists. There are voices out there that are calling for destruction and saying that burning down businesses and buildings is appropriate behavior given what's happened, and that it's an appropriate way to express their discontent. And you know, as a business owner, and Chuck's own businesses, and we own real estate, and well, we're grown-ups, and also we're anarcho-capitalists and voluntarists, and we condemn that kind of activity under any circumstances. You should not be destroying private property. And I've been very disturbed by what I've seen going on over there, and from what I've seen people, you know, calling for destruction. I've seen people that I know, people that I considered friends, who now I wonder if they're even sane, calling for the destruction of private property.
Yeah, it's kind of disturbing. It's my whole life I've just always been told two wrongs don't make a right, and this is a perfect example of that.
Well, what I've noticed is, as both a business owner and a manager of commercial property, I've noticed that the public thinks of commercial property or business properties as commons or public properties. I think they get the wrong idea, because these properties are places of public accommodation. You can go there and do business. But they're not public property. They're a place of public accommodation, but they're private property, and you're allowed to go onto that property to conduct business, you know, do whatever's going on over there, but it's not yours. It's not like a public park. It's not a public parking lot. The parking lots are private, and you can't just go there and do as you please. There's individuals that own these places. They aren't owned by governments. And then you have individuals who oftentimes rent these places, and they set up their business. I have several businesses, and those businesses have insurance policies, and some of my real estate that I own and not rent also has insurance policies that don't cover acts of terrorism. And we know that this is how the insurance companies are going to deal with these acts. They're, you know, it's not vandalism. It's not just arson. It's an act of terrorism, and they're going to frame it like that. And these people are not going to get compensated. So that beauty supply store that had the windows smashed and a Molotov cocktail chucked inside, that set off the sprinklers, and it flooded that store and ruined that person's business. What did she do? You know, she wasn't on that grand jury. She didn't make a decision. Why are people taking it out on her? She might be out of business now. You know, it just might have just completely destroyed her livelihood. I don't see.
And it doesn't matter whether she's white business owner or a black business owner. And I have a feeling she was a black business owner. If the one picture I saw earlier was her with the Sam Shepard, But I do know that these people's lives are just they're being destroyed, and they have done nothing to anybody. They've just provided a service. They're trying to prosper by providing something to their fellow man.
But this is how it is in our society now. You know, our friend Colorblind Justice always refers to the makers and the takers, and this is just a classic example of the makers versus the takers. You have these business people that are out there, pretty much are the center of the economy. They're the ones that create the jobs. They're the ones that have a chance to achieve success, if there is such a chance anymore. And also they're looked to fund just about every form of tax imaginable. And then when something happens within a community that upsets people, well, they take it out on the businesses. You know, I think that we need to, you know, form a community, you know, like Galt's Gulch, you know, where, you know, it's just makers, and we leave the takers behind, you know.
We give them bus tickets to the taker land.
Yeah, it's, you know, see you guys later.
Guys can go live off each other.
Yeah. Figure it out. What happens when nobody creates anything and everybody wants to loot one another? You know, have fun with that. But I'm ready to turn my back on you guys and walk away from this. I don't need this. You know, I've had several businesses vandalized just in this past week, and that's not even related to the Wilson verdict. It doesn't have anything to do with it. It's just drunk people and jerks roaming about trashing private property. And I'm frankly very fed up with it. And when I see people who, you know, think that they're, you know, anti-government, and then protesting the actions of the police, you know, and saying that justice wasn't served, and then they're attacking innocent private people that had nothing to do with this, they have no cause at that point. You know, they've just committed an unjust act against another person. It's totally unwarranted, and their cause is absolutely illegitimate.
It's absolutely correct. And you know, one of the things that I kind of learned throughout the week, was stated pretty plainly in the interview that Ben Swan did with the Oath Keeper man, is that the rumors that they're hearing from the Ferguson police people, the guys that are the lowest ranking people there, is that they're not really happy with all these orders that are coming down the pike, that are coming from somewhere. They're not coming from anybody within that, except maybe their chief. But they're being funneled down this pipe, and these are the way they're supposed to behave, and they don't think this is a good idea, and they don't think it's working, but they have to follow orders, and it's causing the situation to get worse, or causing these people who are agitating the situation to kind of get away with whatever they're doing, and there's no punishment there. They're actually destroying the lives and property of peaceful people who are trying to exercise their constitutional rights. And it seems like there's a part of a government structure somewhere, I think it probably leads to Washington, D.C., that is very much interested in the in this situation getting more and more intense and stirring up more and more problem, and so till, you know, they have a real crisis on their hands, and that's going to play into their hands for their plans for the future or something.
Well, it really serves the government when they have chaos.
It really does.
When all hell is breaking loose, you know, I've been saying for the past few weeks that government has Munchausen syndrome by proxy. It needs to be needed. It needs society to be sick, so that it has a purpose. It has a reason to exist.
Yeah, that's brilliant, Drew. that's so perfect.
I had a call the other day from one of my tenants, and his water was off, and it was causing a major problem with the with the business. You know, they weren't going to be able to operate without any water. This was early in the morning, so I made some quick phone calls to see what was going on. I know there was a construction project going on, and so I thought that might have something to do with it. And then I checked with the maintenance staff, and it turned out they were working on some plumbing, and they turned off the wrong line. And so they immediately turned it back on, and then the guy calls me up and said, "Oh, that's great. You got the water working. You guys are awesome. You're on top of stuff." We weren't on top of it. We screwed up, turned off the wrong water. You know, and that's how government operates. You know, they make something happen and then come in to fix it, and yay, you guys are awesome. You solved the problem. And so, you know, they're gonna let places like Ferguson.
And we only lost 14 buildings to arsonists and a whole car lot of cars, but it was worth it to have you guys come in and save the day.
Yeah.
I'm riding over the hill.
We need you guys, and we need to give you more funds. That's pretty much how this goes. And I'm completely disgusted by it. And I'm pleased to see, you know, the Oath Keepers taking action. And they showed up, and there's volunteers there, and they've set up on the rooftops. And they didn't pull out. You know, I had a conversation with Tom McKergan the night before last. He'll be on the show next week. He's the organizer for the Southern Oregon Oath Keepers. And he had just had a conversation with Stuart Rhodes, and Stuart said that they weren't pulling out. They were dug in. So I don't know how things are today. I've been out working hard, so I don't know how the situation is today, if they're still there or not. But they've been there protecting private property, protecting minority-owned businesses, actually, because, you know that if they weren't focused on minority-owned businesses, the media would just spin that around and say they were only protecting white businesses. You know, so they're focused on primarily minority-owned businesses, and you know, I'm sure if they get qualified volunteers, they could expand that. And it looks like Tony's calling in right now. I'm going to patch her in.
Okay.
Tony Bones, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Excellent. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, we're doing great, Tony. Thanks for coming back.
Absolutely. I'm glad you asked, and I got ahead of time.
I am, too. I want everybody to know that how great a person Tony is. Like, she had about 90 minutes notice because I was doing too many things today, and I let time get way behind on everything, and she graciously agreed to come on the show. So that's really awesome that she is doing this.
Okay, I'm glad to do it. I haven't, done one of these in a while. I tried to take kind of a hiatus of sorts. I'm not sure how well that went, considering I did throw a couple of rallies and head down to Ferguson, but, you know, I tried to take a break.
Now, well, you were there on the scene, and being an eyewitness to the things that that were going on there, there's a lot that you can tell us that probably escapes the mainstream news or even some of the alternative news sources, because whatever gets put out there always has an agenda behind it. Somebody's trying to promote how they think things are. They're trying to find things that support their point of view.
Absolutely, and I agree. When I went down there, I really wanted to get a lot of footage and get a lot of different perspectives. But speaking of mainstream media, one of the most interesting things is that, I mean, I literally saw mainstream media reporters threatened and bullied, and like there were lives threatened. Even like one, I think it was MSNBC, like live on air, and then. But most disturbing of it is when we, you know, later went and saw them on the news, you know, reporting exactly what they were told to and not what was happening. I mean, I was there. I was not afraid of anybody but the costumed individuals the last time I was there. This time around, I'm a little bit more nervous with criminal elements. You know, honestly, I don't know, but I'm definitely excited to go back down there sometime this week. To just see the before and after, because when I had gotten there, it was right before they, you know, put the fence in front of the burnt down Quick Trip. It was I pulled in the night they had done the curfew, and what they had done is they waited till it got dark. The curfew was at midnight, then at 9, like they cut out the street lights, there was men in costumes. No, I mean, all jokes aside, they were ready for war. And it was just interesting. It was so interesting. I still cannot put my finger on it. Something almost like it was training, because it was so peaceful. Like it was not, it was really strange.
Yeah. It's seemed planned.
Yes.
And I don't know why they would do that at night, where people can sneak around in the dark. Maybe they have night vision goggles and figure that the protesters wouldn't, and they'd have an edge.
Visibility, there's that. They have the edge, and they don't want to be recorded. They're practicing, practicing. Mm-hmm. They're definitely aggressing against people.
Yeah, they can get away with stuff easier.
It's harder, to get video, et cetera. Like the McDonald's that was, supposedly looted. From my understanding is that people, women and children, they were tear gassed. There's people rolling around on the ground, yelling, "Please help me, I'm on fire." And these people ran into the McDonald's to try to get water and milk to neutralize the tear gas. And then naturally they start being pelted with bean bags, bean bag bullets or whatever. And that's what broke the window out of the McDonald's. And then shortly after that, the police ran in and also let off tear gas as well in the McDonald's. Even the looting, like in the beginning, a majority of the looting happened over like close to a mile away from the actual protest site, and there are people coming in from out of town.
Opportunity.
I don't know what I'm going to walk into this time around, but
now there was. I think this was Jakari Jackson was interviewing a young man from Ferguson, and he was pretty disappointed that all these people were coming in. And they weren't there to protest and to aid in their cause. They were there to steal things and to burn buildings down. And he was really pretty disappointed in that reaction from other people. He said, here they had something that they wanted to talk about. And they have some real legitimate grievances of, living in a town where 70% black and they have 3 black police officers on the police force. It's just, there's some inequities going on here, some things that probably need to be changed.
Absolutely, but I think there's going to be some more effective, hopefully long-term solutions.
I've heard a couple of good solutions come out of this so far. One of them was that it would make it a harder decision for police to abuse people's rights and to beat them and, physically, even kill them if they knew that they were going to be facing a civil liability lawsuit. And that in order to be employed, they had to have personal liability insurance. So, it'd be like a doctor.
Yeah,
you start to mess up very many times and your insurance rates go up, you're not going to be employable. I mean, you're not going to be able to make enough money to pay for your insurance.
In a free market, you'd have other forms of protection. I mean, there's definitely a need for protection, but there's not a need for a monopoly on protection. And that's what breeds a lot of corruption and abuse.
And there's no need for the police officers that, just don't have the problem-solving ability to solve a problem without resorting to violence.
Yeah, it's pretty pitiful. And I like the idea of, liability insurance and different rules and things that, hoops to jump through. But realistically, Eric Garner, I believe, it's just there's no accountability that I'm seeing right now. I'm usually pretty, more upbeat.
You watch that video and Eric Garner and you wonder... You wonder what are these people thinking of that said there's no crime committed here? I'm just speechless. Did they close their eyes during part of it?
It's horrifying, and what's even more horrifying is the lack of outrage and the lack of outrage. But don't get me wrong, the movement or whatever you want to call it. Police brutality, it is definitely on mainstream now. And, people are waking up at a rapid rate, but it's just baffling. It's baffling that anybody can watch that and say, no indictment or we're not guilty. Like the Kelly Thomas one we discussed last time. I mean, just wow.
Yes. One of the things that, and I might be exaggerating a little bit, but because I don't do, total research on this, but it just seems to, that there's almost 2 to 3 of these kinds of stories every day.
Yeah.
And they don't all end up with someone dying, but they're crazy things like people throwing a flashbang grenade in a baby's crib and just crazy stuff like that. Like who would do stuff like that? Just all sorts of incidents. There's the homeless guy that got, I guess he committed felony camping and was shot to death because he was trying to keep his pants from falling down. They thought he was going for a gun. And they just drilled him. And there's a poor, it was a guy that survived two tours of duty in Iraq, and police busted in his house and it was the wrong address, and they filled him with 70 shots before he died. That was within 7 minutes or 7 seconds, excuse me, 70 shots in 7 seconds.
No, I don't know.
He didn't even say he had a rifle in his hand, but he didn't even take the safety off. It's just crazy, insane stuff like that is happening, just almost daily. And I would think if I was a police officer, and I was a, even just a mediocre one, I would be pretty upset because I'm being painted with the same brush that these people that are doing all these horrendous acts are causing people to think of me as I'm that kind of a person too. It's a kind of a guilt by association. And so I would think that they're starting to really create a lack of morale within the ranks of police officers. I mean, they,
people absolutely are kind of, but where does this mind frame, mentality come from? Well, let's take a look at what they're hired to do with our own resources. They are pretty much hired for the most part to farm us for our resources. And not only that, we're expected to pay for it.
Right.
Well, where does this mentality come from? These people are kidnapping and caging peaceful people every day for being poor, for plants, for rainwater, for not making it to court. Like, where does this McDodd complex and mentality come from? Well, this entitled need for this submission. Like, I don't know where it starts or how someone can actually grow to that point to throw a flat, a grenade in a baby's, crib. But I can see where the mentality may be coming from.
Yeah, you're exactly right. They've lost total sight of what their mission is, and that's just to protect people, to keep people safe, protect life, protect property. They're not about that at all. They're about collecting money. They're highwaymen.
And even if they got into it with, good intentions, which I understand, it doesn't. You get into this field and you see what's going on, and good intentions, from the beginning or not, you're still accountable for your actions. And it's not right. We have to find a way to encourage more, private companies for security and protection or something to that effect. Give them some competition and to stop funding this behavior. Every time you take a plea deal, you get stopped fine. If you ever hurt anybody, you have not done anything wrong. There's a difference between law and legislation. And that is why I'm so passionate about the never take a plea deal aspects of my civil disobedience. If you think about it, we're funding this behavior. We're funding it, and we've got to find a way to stop this, or at least put the brakes on it by cutting into their pocket and waking people up and recording, holding people accountable through transparency.
And that whole system with the plea deals, that is so rigged anyway. They overcharge you with what you're going to do, so that you're looking at if they get all these counts. Get you convicted of all these counts, you're looking at, like, in some cases, lifetimes in prison, or you can plead guilty and we'll get you out in 2 years. And it's a lot of people say, well, I don't want to go through this. I'm not sure even if I did win, it's going to bankrupt me. At least when I just do my time, in 2 years I'll get out, I'll have a house and, I can reunite my family or something. So people sometimes just do that because it may seem like in the short run it makes
out of
sense.
Convenience, sure.
Yeah,
and it really doesn't.
It really doesn't.
There's other things. Like, people say, why would you, stand up to something so small, like a failure to provide, my slave identification card while I was operating my modern day horse? If I don't have the spine to stand up to something as simple as that, what are our children looking at? And then you're definitely not going to have the spine, like Rich Paul. That is why. Rich Paul is awesome. I mean, he was looking at 80 years for less than like a stick of butter's weight of flowers, and he refused the plea deal. Honestly, I do have a line. I have a family, and there's my personal, what I'm willing to risk is about, I'll about a month of my time, maybe in a cage is, what I've looked at altogether for my last plea refusals. But if I was looking at something more steep, I don't know where I'd cave. My first
Yeah, it's a tough
instinct
call.
Is to be with my family, you know, but yeah, so I guess, like as you were touching base on, there's little things we can do, you know, and as soon as one, two, three people at docket start standing up and, you know, refusing, you know, to fund criminal organization with their resources, you know, then maybe we'll start seeing some change, or at least get some people thinking, you know.
One of the things you mentioned, you were talking about, you know, in the free markets, there's competition. And here in Ferguson, we have an example of competition. The city police, the county police, the state police were all there. They had National Guard troops there. Nobody was protecting the people. Oath Keepers show up, and they can't protect everybody, but the places they protected, they are still standing. They weren't torched. They protected people's lives because some people were living in those buildings and they may have perished in a fire. So potentially they're even doing that. And these people are all doing this. They're volunteering to do this because they see it as something that's necessary for our society as a whole. And the biggest obstruction they're having to accomplish their goals is coming from the government police.
Yeah.
They don't want them there. They're ruining their training.
Well, and what we have, Chuck, with the Oath Keepers is what I've been calling for quite a while is instead of law enforcement, public law enforcement, we have private rights protection. That's the alternative of law enforcement. And the Oath Keepers are making a great example of how that could work in a true free market society.
And it's amazing that the government action is serving to divide people along racial grounds, which is partially successful. And they're able to, because of things that have happened in the past, I don't, it's not too hard to get, if I was a black person, it would be much easier to get me riled up about somebody who had the same color skin as I did being shot by a guy who was a lot whiter than I was. And it'd be pretty easy to get me emotionally involved in that, especially when I was younger. As I get older, I realize that that's, you know, force and violence is always going to give you the opposite result of what you want. But
Right from the beginning, they were trying to push this race thing. I was there. There. I did not encounter any racism. I am a 5'4", pale skin, little, you know, ornery girl with a megaphone. You know, like I was not afraid or made uncomfortable by anybody but the terrorists. That's what they were.
Well,
it was amazing.
Listening to the Oath Keeper guy that was interviewed by Ben Swan, he's talking about how the people, once they realized they were there to try and protect them, they embraced them and it brought people together. And so it's, you know, that's kind of the essence of free markets, is that everything that's done is cooperative. And you have to serve other people to accomplish the goal that you want to accomplish. You can't just force people to behave the way they want, way you want them to behave. You have to be an example or to just protect the people you think need to be protected, without forcing them to pay you any money or whatever. It's your rewards are the peaceful society you want to live in, and. I think this is just a beautiful example of how markets work. Let's see. I had a couple other things here. This is also, I think this is pretty evident of how the government has been fairly successful in militarizing our police. They really see themselves as combatants. And they see the people as the enemy.
And that's what I think they were practicing. It has to be. I mean, they were shooting tear gas at media that are out in the desert, you know, with the war and stuff, and they're not even aggressive against like that. They're like, what's going on? There's these supposedly, like, professional men running around with their fingers on the trigger yelling, I'm going to effing kill you, you know, to peaceful protesters and senators and, you know, mainstream media. I mean, it was crazy, and just the amount of force that poured in comparison to, like, the even potential. Like, there was not that many people there when I was there, but just, like, it was so just grossly, like, overreacting overreaction that is, it was almost like, it was almost not the ad, like I said, it's like a test.
It wasn't lost on me or Drew that, I think it was 2 years ago, they had drills practicing this exact scenario in Ferguson, Missouri. Just a coincidence that it happened to be where the trouble breaks out.
And they want you to get violent. They want you to start, you know, breaking things and lighting fires. And that sounds messed up, but that is what they're prepared to deal with. That's why I advocate, like, you know, don't resist arrest. You know, yes, I believe in self-defense, but I don't advocate resisting arrest, even if it's unjust, simply because they will kill you. You know, and when you're dealing with these terrorists, they can be unpredictable. And, going and lighting things on fire and pretending like that is what you have to do to get justice, that's just not the case. And recently I made a post, actually, with a copy and a paste of another person that I respect's thoughts, and put it, cop block, kind of made more or less disassociating me from, or making a difference. I guess Cassandra, I was told I had been pretty much advocating and condoning the destruction of property, which I believe in freedom of speech, but there's two rules on the cop block posting, and I really wasn't comfortable with cop block being an avenue to project something like that. I know she was live streaming, but I fully support her, right to think whatever she thinks, but I really was relieved to hear what you had said earlier towards the beginning of the show. I was listening before I called in. I feel like we were definitely on the same mind frame with that.
Yeah,
as far as private businesses and how that's not going to de-escalate any situation or get it closer to solution.
Now, Alex Jones has made several, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I don't have any reason to doubt it after, hearing some of these police officers talk on videos, but he says that there's been a concerted effort to not to hire police with IQs over 100 because the ones that are between 80 and 100, they obey orders better. I think this is part of the problem that's led to Michael Brown's death, is they have a person in there that, he does not have the problem solving skills to deal with anything other than by using force.
You have to disassociate yourself to do something like that, to kidnap people for a living, for being poor, not being able to pay fines, because that's really mostly what they're, when they're getting picked up for warrants, is they don't have, the bribe or the ransom, to pay the state. So they're kidnapping poor people, people that are smoking plants, people that are experimenting with their own mind. You have to disassociate yourself to a certain extent for at least your paycheck, to be able to do something like that. But, yeah, I'd imagine the higher the IQ goes, the more that hopefully it becomes less acceptable, critical thinking skills, stuff like that.
Hopefully. I really think that the more power you give them, that's their tool, then it's like a hammer. If that's the only tool you have, every problem looks like a nail and you want to just pound it in the ground. That's kind of how they act to everything now. They've been given this power and they think they have authority to do everything. They aren't smart enough to understand that they are restricted in what they can do, and they certainly don't have any clue. You can tell them anything, they'll believe it. But they just don't have any clue about our legal system and how it's supposed to work and how people are innocent until proven guilty. And you aren't the judge, jury, and executioner. Mm-mm. But they seem to behave as though they are. Let's see. I'm going to save this, I think, to the end. But any other observations that you have from being in Ferguson? Were there any pleasant surprises or things that made you feel there's hope for humanity? Oh yes.
The scary black people. I met so many awesome people, so many different kinds of people from all walks of life that were standing, coming together, supportive, bringing sandwiches, water, just doing something, and that was really refreshing to see and just be able to connect with all of those people. I met Jesse Jackson. I think I made him a little uncomfortable. Jesse Jackson, and it was an all-around really life-changing experience. But yeah, there's definitely good things. Connections made, ideas shared, I feel like. One of the things I focused on was, you know, helping people, telling people how to, like neutralize tear gas, Melox, and water, you know, 50-50, you know, things like that that are easily accessible, that can help, you know, basically survival in a war zone, you know. Well, and I definitely, I think I shared a lot of good ideas as far as recording the police and creating an objective record, because they really do act differently when they know they're being recorded. They really do. And then, of course, if your word against theirs, then it's not going to be yours. That's going to be, you know. So just peaceful means peaceful means of resistance.
That thing you mentioned about they act differently when they're being filmed, that's been proven over and over and over again. And the police departments that have put cameras on their policemen have seen the complaints go down by 80%. It's just, it makes a big difference.
You have to. I mean, you're giving too much authority to too little few people, and you have to.
Yeah, this is works because you're not using force. You're just recording what they say and what they do. You're not forcing them to do anything.
That's why I'm such a huge advocate of being. You can be assertive, and I want to say nice, but you know, not aggressive in your demeanor. You know, because when I'm, you know, talking to terrorists and you know men in black dresses and things like that, I'm nice. I'm assertive. I'm not censoring myself. You know, to the extent where I'm not expressing how I really truly feel. But if it's being recorded, it's very apparent who the aggressor is. So worst case scenario, something is to happen. Like, you do not want to look like there's any chance. Maybe not any chance, but do you see what I'm saying? It's so important to create an objective record and definitely make it shown that you're not the aggressor in the situation.
It may end up saving your life.
Absolutely, or your friends. Every time you see state workers, actually, I advocate recording all interaction with all state workers, whether it be DFS or DFS.
I think that's judges. Probably a really good idea. The less police training they have, the more dangerous they can be, because they really are loose cannons. Those two recent cases with homeschoolers. Geez, getting tasered and pepper sprayed, and you know, their children are left there at home crying.
horrible.
Yeah, I can't imagine if that had happened to me when I was a child, how I would have reacted.
How do you deal with these people? Like, how do we honestly? How are we supposed? You know, you hear stuff like that, and I think things I probably shouldn't say. You know, like how do we deal with these people? That's why I love Cop Block so much. I'm not going to pretend like, you know, putting it out there to the public is going to make the hurt go away or change what happened as far as, you know, victims of police abuse. But social ostracization and putting their names and their phone numbers out there for the public to see when they're going to the grocery store or they're going to work, like, people will know. And it does work. And it hopefully, you know, in the end will sway their behavior or...
Yeah, it's the same as filming them. This is what happens when you call the police. Is that Rob Hustle? Is that the guy that did that?
And it prevents victims by making aggressors in the community known. You can hopefully avoid them.
I don't know if the people out there in the audience have seen that video. It's pretty compelling. This is what happens when you call the police. And it just shows all these police just beating on people that are handcuffed and can't resist or can't protect themselves, and just slamming them in the head and... just film clips that are out there in their public domain. And I imagine he had a lot more that he could have used, but the song is only so many minutes long.
Right.
So Tony, Drew Lamb here. How do you recommend that protesters carry themselves? You know, I was watching live streams in St. Louis and also in Ferguson, and I saw it. Well, this is it. In Ferguson in particular, I was surprised to see how the police were being directed. And there was a point where they withdrew, they went back into the police station, then they left through the back of the building, walked down an alleyway or through a parking lot or something, then looped back around onto the main drag there, and then started pushing people forward and then telling them to get off of the sidewalk and to get onto the sidewalk on the other side of the street after they told them to stay out of the street. And it seems to me that they were just trying to confuse everybody and get them to not follow the initial instructions so they could start arresting people. And it seems that this is a tactic that they deploy. You know, just kind of stir things up, mix them up, give them orders, and then give them conflicting orders. And then when they don't follow those arbitrary orders, then start cracking skulls and arresting people.
So I think to add to that, I think they not only did they give them conflicting orders, I think they kind of pushed them off the sidewalk into the street.
Yeah, then they started arresting people. So how should people be conducting themselves if they're going to go downtown someplace and protest? I mean, I've done this before. Chuck has done this before. I've been the person who is in charge of talking to the cops and dealing with the cops, but I'd never encountered a situation like that. Almost did in San Francisco a few years ago, but what I saw was deeply disturbing.
Well, I would never suggest that I know how anybody should peacefully assemble. I think just getting out there is the biggest step that needs to take place. I can give you some tips or tell you what I do. Like I touched base on as far as just, you can be assertive. And if you can look at my videos, you can be assertive and say what you mean. You know, kind of like the eloquent F you, maybe, you know. I mean, without being aggressive. Like, so keeping, maybe you're kind of working on that. Let's see. Having multiple live streamers from different angles that will help keep you safe. Don't, you know, you want to go with maybe like 3 people at least. Bamboozer.com or Bamboozer, it's a phone application. It's a free phone application. You pull it up, you get yourself logged in. I mean, you know, it's very simple. You hit a red button, you can be live streaming it live even, or you can start private. But I think that is one of the bigger things I've been pushing lately is the Bamboozer or just live streaming applications when you're recording your interaction with law enforcement or going into what's called a war zone, you know, because it's free, it's really easy to use, and if something, you know, if something were to happen, you have it backed up on a website somewhere, something to your phone or, you know, any number of things could possibly happen. So that's another big thing. I would advocate for, you know, being safe out there.
And if you're out there in kind of a remote rural area, don't think this isn't going to happen to you. Medford is by no means a big metropolis. It's about 70,000 people live here. It's kind of a quiet, sleepy town most of the time. But since I've retired from my store that I had at the end of 2007, so it's been almost 7 years now, I think there's been 7 or 8 people killed by police here in this area. If you include Ashland, probably 8 for sure.
They are definitely not isolated incidents.
Yeah, and they're... this is not a really big crime problem area, but somehow the police feel it necessary to empty their... When they want to start shooting, they empty their guns, and it's
a good indication that there's something wrong, you know, universally with the way the system or supposed protection is set up. You know, it's definitely not an area thing. It's there's something wrong with the mentality that we're breeding.
Yeah, the most disturbing case for me was this poor young man who was mentally... He's having a mental episode. He was kind of schizophrenic or something. And his mother was worried because he was acting kind of violent. She called to get help, and the police showed up and just shot him, killed him. That's just what she wanted. She wanted help to get him taken to a place where they could get him back on meds and get him under control. And he was just swinging his sword around, and they just drilled him. And that was just sad.
You know, we don't live in a voluntary society, and even people, even voluntaries, like, we don't live in a voluntary society, you know, and there's situations where you or your family are in danger of being caged for not reporting things or not going to the police. They have a monopoly on this protection, and then you see these people going to jail for being poor, yet as long as they have the money, they're also negotiating with people actually committing, you know, creating victims, you know, negotiating with child predators, things of that nature, you know, like, that's... Just the whole system is
horribly corrupt, and I wouldn't be surprised if there weren't people in the prison system, the private prison system that have got control over legislatures and people who have, you know, attorney generals who can move this stuff down the line and tell them that we want to get, we need to keep arresting more people. We need to fill these prisons up and get the crime off the streets. And they try and make, rationalize and make it sound like it's a, you know, a really great goal to accomplish. And they're really just taking otherwise peaceful people or people that are at best minor criminals that maybe should be, maybe they had too much to drink and should just sleep it off for a couple days in jail and then come back out or something, you know, maybe get a minor fine or maybe no fine at all. But they really weren't hurting anybody. They were just kind of dangerous because they were weren't under control. And they, you know, then now that they've sobered up, they're, you know, they have some remorse for what happened and just put them back out in society and hopefully they won't do it again. It's the people that are really dangerous. The people are really dangerous. They don't want those people in the prisons. They're too hard to control. So they let them go and they keep the peaceful people because they're good workers and they can get them working for 20 cents an hour.
Oh yeah. We're creating a huge workforce of people that we're just shunning and treating like, you know, scum for, you know, majority of these are victimless crimes, you know, altering your own state of consciousness or basically prohibition,
yeah.
You know, selling things, yeah, it's absurd. So
it really is.
So I mean, you got to strike the root, or once you get kind of and understand that there's that other people don't own you, and strangers shouldn't dictate your life, and there's a difference between law and legislation. And once you start to come to terms with that and understand that, just it becomes more clear and maybe more hopeless. Maybe that's pessimistic, but
well, I want to give
hopeless. It's not hopeless, but
yeah, I want to give. Cop Block a big thank you for all that they do, because this is really, this is a line in the sand that we should all be standing on the correct side of and keeping that line from being violated by the government. It's this is our own personal safety and freedom that's at stake. And I tell you, if one of these situations like this in Ferguson gets out of hand and it creates a bad enough destruction of property and life, it's going to be an excuse for a state of emergency to be declared, a police state to be rolled out, and you don't know what can happen after that. I mean, just imagine your worst nightmare, and it's probably not as bad as it's going to be.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's,
I don't know. I have a feeling we're going to find out.
I mean, just look, 9/11, which I think was a total false flag. Look what that's done to our freedoms to travel, mm-hmm. to move from place to place. So we're considered a criminal until we have to prove ourselves innocent, and that is completely foreign to our judicial system, the way it was set up. But it's not the way it is anymore. You go into an airport, you cannot get on the plane until you prove you're not a criminal. Then you have to take off your shoes. You have to let them go through your bags. You can't have anything over 3 ounces worth of any liquid. I mean, like, seriously, a bottle of water or anything. I mean, just you have to make
the most profound effect.
You have to prove to them your computer isn't a bomb. It's just it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, the most damaging, I think, or maybe that's the wrong word, is the little acts of submission that people are just doing now every day without even thinking about it. The little acts of submission, that's what I think is most damaging as far as that goes. But I appreciate you guys having me on. And Cop Block, remember, Cop Block's decentralized. There's so many different ways to contribute, and it's a decentralized project. It's more or less an idea, and there's a really diverse group of people. It's not all anarchists. Pretty much, we are very gung-ho about the non-aggression principle. At least we don't advocate violence at all. But I mean, there's so many different kinds of people in Cop Block, and we're all doing things anybody can do. So hopefully, someone hears this and decides to get involved, or at least check it out and learn how to protect themselves and other people.
Yeah, and that,
my phone is about done.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being on today. It's really good to hear your voice again. And we need more clear-thinking people like you out there when these kinds of situations erupt, because I think you're a level-headed, clear-thinking person that has the right goals in mind, and you're there to show that anarchy means peace and order and not having to be forced into actions that are against your self-interest.
Yes. Anarchy does not mean chaos. It does not mean no rules. It means no rulers. We, you know, no masters, no slaves. Humans have always wanted to be organized. It's not going to be complete chaos. You know, people are still going to see a need for, you know, services to, like, put out fires. You know, there will be people to build the roads, you know. But I appreciate you guys talking with me tonight, and I'm so sleepy. I hope I was at least somewhat coherent.
Oh,
but,
you were
yeah,
awesome.
You guys.
And it's going to be an awesome show. Look for the replay on the UCY Facebook. Their UCY.TV page, and then they're also on YouTube. They have we'll have a replay of this. It'll show up tomorrow, so you'll be able to hear it. You were awesome.
Thank you. Nothing to be
afraid of. You just, if anything,
I
talk too much.
No, well, I've been maybe accused of the same thing, but I wouldn't disrespect myself or others as to censor myself. So, all right, well, I'll talk to you guys later, and I appreciate you guys. Bye.
Thank you very much, Tony. Okay, so just in the minutes we have left, I just have just a couple things to finish up with. I'm really concerned about this whole situation, and Drew started to talk about this, and I kind of hinted at it a little bit earlier. This to me seems like it's a purposeful event that's being created. And he's talking about the guy that called up because the water had been turned off accidentally. He didn't know what the problem was. And when the guys figured it out that they turned off the wrong water and turned it back on, he thinks that, oh, I called Drew and he got it all fixed and everything. And that's great. I love this guy. And it really, that was, you know, the guys that were doing the construction work caused the problem, and they made the solution. So the guys saluting them for making the solution when really they didn't. And that's just a perfect example. I love that example. That was brilliant. They're trying to create a situation that's so bad that people will be begging them. You have to do something. The government has to do something. You have to stop this violence, this destruction of property. You have to stop this. There's millions and hundreds of millions of dollars worth of property is being destroyed. And the government said, well, if you're sure you want us to, and then bam, and they will never ratchet back that loss of freedom. We'll be in a perpetual state of emergency. And they'll be looking for the next person. Anybody that speaks out, they'll be starting to look at them. You know, it'll just be like East Germany, where 70% of the people were spying on somebody or spying on their neighbors. And I don't. we have computers now, so it's a lot more efficient. It'd probably be able to get up to about the 95% spying on their neighbors. I think there's about 5% that just won't do it. But I think there's 95% that will. And some of you people that are listening to this program probably think, oh, I wouldn't do that. But when it comes down to it, you're saying, and they're offering you the choice. Well, you can take this dissenter chip if you don't want to spy on your neighbors, or you can take the one that says you're a cooperative spy and you're going to tell us if you hear anything that could be a problem to our government, and you're going to report those things. And you know, some of the people will be really enthusiastic about it, and some of them will do it because they're afraid. But I tell you, most of the people will turn you in. And what happens is you get in societies where your family says, listen, you don't tell anybody about anything. You don't open your mouth. And so your society breaks down. There's no cohesiveness. There's no cooperation. There's no doing things to help your neighbor because nobody wants to know anything about you except, hello, how are you today? That's fine. Okay, I have to go. And your interactions are. They're very superficial. They don't mean anything. They don't go any depth, and it just destroys the fabric of society that keeps us united and working together for common interests. Because no one wants to share what those common interests are. They might be considered subversive. And so this is really, really, really a serious situation. We can't let contrived and agitators contrive situations and agitators that inflame people's emotions and get them to react in ways that aren't really productive for their cause. We can't let them destroy the things that are positive about our society. And really, you want to look at any time that somebody's using force, it's probably because they have bad ideas, and that's the only way they can accomplish their goals is to force people to do them, because no one wants to do these things. the police people, by I bet you by and large they don't want to do these things, but they have to make that house payment. And so they think, if I don't follow these orders, I'm going to get fired. Well, I tell you guys, if you're feeling this way, I would start looking for another job. If you're feeling, if I don't do these things that are making me sick to my stomach, make me lose sleep at night, I think it's time to get a different kind of job. You're going to be painted with the same brush of the people that are out there, the trigger happy guys that are out there killing people for felony camping. And that's just really a sad outcome. So that's all I had, Drew. Sorry I took up most of the time. Do you have any to add?
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about this case really quickly where somebody smashed some windows on one of my businesses. This didn't have anything to do with the protest, just a drunk guy after the bars closed running around causing problems. And so he busted up a few windows. Cops came. They didn't find him. They took some evidence. There was some blood evidence and a few other things. And so they sent it off to forensics. And I called the other day to see what was going on. And they said, oh, well, you know, maybe in about a year or so, we'll hear back from forensics. And I said, well, you know, it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. There's a bar just around the corner. Did anybody go over there and talk to anybody to see, you know, if they recognize this guy? You have a brief description. You know, there's only so many places in that little town to buy alcohol, you know, and at that late, you know, he had to have been out at one of the bars. But no, they sent evidence off to forensics, didn't do any sort of old school investigative work to deal with the case. And the guy made it sound like, you know, they had better things to do. But there's really not that much going on in that little town, you know.
And they don't have better things to do.
No, four businesses getting smashed up in one night is a big deal in that little town. Nothing else happened that night. Maybe a few speeders or something like that, but nothing else happened. And then they've got, you know, Grubbs, who was nearly decapitated a few years ago, and still haven't solved it. So thanks for letting me rant. And you guys have been listening to Double Cross Radio. See you next week.
Time with feeling, you're bound to break one more time.